This is Colorado Edition from KUNC. On today's show, we'll take a look at how climate change is shaping the Senate race.
They're talking about it on the campaign trail. They're putting out policy statements on it. They're talking about it on social media. They're attacking Cory Gardner over it.
Plus, we'll discuss the increase in research spending at local universities.
And why a veteran was inspired to write a children's book about soldiers.
They wanted to know, what did you do every day? Where did you eat? Where did you sleep?
That's coming up. It's Wednesday, October 9th. You're listening to KUNC's Colorado Edition, your daily look at news from around the state. I'm Lily Tyson, sitting in today for Henry Zimmerman.
And I'm Erin O'Toole. Tonight, there's an open house in Fort Collins about the controversial Northern Integrated Supply Project, or NISP. Depending on who you ask, it's either a much-needed water lifeline for communities on the fast-growing Front Range, or it's a project that isn't needed and something that will hurt ecosystems along the Poudre River. Here to get us up to speed on what we need to know is KUNC's Luke Runyon. Hey, Luke.
Hi, Erin.
So for those who aren't familiar, what exactly is NISP?
NISP stands for the Northern Integrated Supply Project, and it's a proposal that has been in the works in some form for about 20 years. And the biggest pieces of the project are two new reservoirs that are proposed to be built north of Fort Collins and Greeley. The one north of Fort Collins is called Glade Reservoir, and it's probably the more controversial of the two. As it stands right now, Glade would flood this valley that a lot of people in northern Colorado have probably driven through. The reservoir would be in this stretch of Highway 287. That's the two-lane highway that goes from Fort Collins to Laramie, Wyoming. And if you've ever seen the big rock with graffiti and art all over it between those two cities, that's where this reservoir would be located. And its construction would require the highway to be moved to a new location to accommodate it. And then the other reservoir in the mix in this project is Gailton Reservoir, which would be north of Greeley in a more remote part of Weld County.
I mean, that sounds like an awful lot of effort to build these two additional reservoirs. Why are they needed?
Northern Water is the agency that's pushing for these two new reservoirs, and they have a group of Front Range water providers who would benefit from the additional water that these reservoirs would hold. And Northern says that this project is an absolute necessity. They argue that Colorado is growing in population and that those growing cities will need more water and that these reservoirs aren't just adding redundancy to municipal water supplies. They're filling a gap between the demand for water in the state and the available supply. Most of the water from NISP would be going to smaller communities along the Front Range that are growing really quickly, like Windsor, Erie, Frederick, Firestone, Severance. Even some water would be going out to Fort Morgan out on the plains. These are places that want to grow, but if you project out into the future, they don't have the water right now secured to make some of that growth possible.
This would help make sure people in this rapidly growing area have the water they need, but some people see a downside.
Yeah, there's a lot of concerns about NISP that have been bubbling up for almost two decades now. This is a project that the environmental community in northern Colorado is really worried about. NISP would tap into the Poudre River, which flows through Fort Collins, to fill up these reservoirs. And the Poudre already runs really low at certain times of the year because of demand from farmers and other irrigators out on the plains. So then if you add in something like climate change, which could both limit the snowpack that feeds the river and put more strains on the river with higher temperatures, NISP opponents argue that the addition of these two new reservoirs could really injure the Poudre River and the ecosystems that rely on it. And then, as with any infrastructure debate in Colorado, there's some questioning of whether these reservoirs are really necessary or if they just feed into unsustainable growth in Colorado. Some people would say that we need to be conserving water, limiting the use on farms and in cities to meet future needs, not just keep building these big buckets to store it.
So what is next for this project?
quite a few more meetings, and at least a couple big decisions need to be made before it can move forward into a construction phase. This latest meeting is an open house meant to allow the public to give feedback on a few specific elements of the plan. For it to move forward, Northern Water is entering into something called an intergovernmental agreement with Larimer County, which is where Glade Reservoir would be built. And this is basically a chance for local officials to make some demands of Northern and stipulate certain aspects of how the project would end up being built. So they're talking about recreation on and around Glade. That's boating, hiking, camping. And they're also talking about where and how Highway 287 would be moved, because this new reservoir would flood an existing stretch of the highway. And they're talking about a pipeline. Now, this pipeline would start at the reservoir and move this water to some of the project's participants, which are scattered all across the northern Front Range and Plains. So once they figure all that out, then Larimer County would enter into this agreement. But the project also needs a water quality permit from the State Department of Public Health and Environment, and it still needs a final approval from the Army Corps of Engineers. So, with all of that, by Northern Water's timeline, if everything goes their way, they could be in construction of the new dams and pipelines in 2023. But these projects have all kinds of things that can hold them up, and you can be very certain that this one will be challenged in court once those final permits are issued.
Luke Runyon is KUNC's Colorado River Basin reporter. Luke, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Now let's take a look at today's headlines.
The city of Longmont has declared a climate emergency, joining a host of other communities across the country, including Fort Collins, Basalt, Boulder, and two counties in Colorado, Pitkin and Boulder. City Council voted unanimously on the move, declaring Longmont's intent to take immediate and accelerated action to address the climate change crisis. Citizens addressing the Longmont City Council heavily quoted Swedish activist Greta Thunberg, and one even pulled out a guitar for a serenade to Earth.
A Colorado doctor fired after trying to help a terminally ill man obtain drugs to end his life has filed an updated lawsuit that challenges her firing by a Christian hospital company. In the case against Centura Health filed Monday, Dr. Barbara Morris alleges it retaliated against her in violation of Colorado's assisted suicide law and that it unlawfully inserted itself in the doctor-patient relationship. Colorado law prohibits corporations from interfering with a physician's professional judgment. Morris was fired in August after she and patient Neil Mahoney asked a judge to say whether Centura could stop her from helping him. He has sought help elsewhere and is not part of the lawsuit anymore.
Colorado has unveiled a plan for a public health insurance option, which officials say could lower premiums for some residents. The state wants to set a maximum reimbursement rate for hospitals and offer the public insurance plans on the individual market, which is used by about 8% of Coloradans. The plans would be run through private insurance companies. Officials in the state's Division of Insurance predict the new plans would bring down premiums by as much as 18% starting in 2022. But some healthcare providers are concerned. The Colorado Hospital Association says the insurance market could be destabilized if enough people switch to the new plans. They also worry about their reimbursement rates being set by the state. Lawmakers will take up the proposal in January.
When a child sees someone in a military uniform, you might be surprised at what they want to know first. That was the case for former Army officer Erin Morris. She took kids' questions and turned them into a book for children. KUNC's Michael DeJuana has more on this veteran-turned-author.
2-year-old Sebastian Morris Stearns is nestled between his mom and dad on the couple's living room couch in Arvada.
Do you know what he is?
Yeah.
He's a soldier.
Sebastian is asking his dad, Travis Stearns, and his mom, Erin Morris, about the pictures he's looking at in one of his books. It's called Who is Sam the Soldier?
A plane.
Kind of helicopter.
Helicopter.
Yeah.
A helicopter.
Yeah. A plane.
And his mom, who also works as a lawyer, is the author.
Yeah, apparently a writer.
Morris and Stearns are recently discharged from the Army. She was an officer in the Judge Advocate General Corps, or JAG. He was an artillery warrant officer and now a stay-home dad.
Just the year that we've been out, I couldn't even imagine how busy I'd be. Because I thought that I'd have plenty of time to do things. He's all my day.
Both were deployed to Afghanistan at the same time, but on different bases. And as hard as that was, civilian life hasn't been easy either.
I didn't realize it was going to be so difficult and such a transition.
The toughest part, she says, is seeing Americans so divided about so many things like politics.
It is drastic for us because we have been around so many people and we have our own views about different things, but we work with all these other people that have different views than us, and we're not used to being separated by our views.
There's a name for this kind of thing, the civilian-military divide. It's where the majority of Americans who don't serve in the military are unaware of the sacrifices of those who do, as well as the fringe benefits, like working alongside a diverse group of people.
It's a huge issue in a democracy, is the degree to which the society is connected to its military. For a variety of reasons.
Experts like Janine Davidson are studying how an ethos of service to country can help bridge the divide.
The primary reason being you don't want to separate the people from the decisions to use force and, you know, what's happening abroad.
Davidson is a former Undersecretary of the Navy and current president of Metropolitan State University of Denver. She also serves on the National Commission on Military, National, and Public Service, which is looking for ways to narrow the divide.
A large percentage of people that are in the military are sons and daughters or grandsons and granddaughters of people that have served.
But the percentage of Americans with any military experience has been declining since the Vietnam War. Yet while fewer are serving, the military is getting more racially and ethnically diverse, and more women are enlisting than ever before. Erin Morris celebrates all of that in her book.
When the 8-year-olds look at me and go, wait, you were a soldier? When I realized they didn't see that, they didn't see themselves. And so I wanted to explain to them, like, no, there are so many of us out there. We look like normal people, but really we're soldiers, or really we're veterans as well.
She learned that during a show and tell in her sister's classroom in North Carolina. And the kids weren't asking about guns and tanks.
They wanted to know, what did you do every day? Where did you eat? Where did you sleep?
Which the book answers. The main character is Sam, an ordinary private and a mechanic. He wears his uniform and guides kids through a typical day in the life of a soldier. As she reads to her son, Sebastian, he's immersed in learning.
This is Sam Smith. He is a soldier in the United States Army. See, that's Sam.
Sam.
Yeah? Here, look at this one. What is the Army? The United States Army is the oldest and largest branch in the armed forces. The Army is made up of soldiers from all over the world with different genders, religions, ethnicities, and races. The Army is very diverse.
Sam the soldier can be seen exercising, eating breakfast, working, hanging out with his friends, and ready to fight for his country as a last resort, but also helping during a natural disaster and cooperating with others to keep people safe. Above all, serving his country.
No more.
Oh, there's no more. It's over now.
Michael DeJoanna, KUNC.
You're listening to Colorado Edition from KUNC. Colorado State University recently announced that its research activity is at a record high, with research spending hitting almost $400 million for the last fiscal year.
And it's not the only university in our area that is spending a lot of money on research. The University of Colorado said that last fiscal year it spent $1.2 billion across its four campuses. Here to tell us what this means is Dan Mica. He's a reporter for BizWest. Dan began by telling us about where the money for all this research comes from.
These are usually split between federal dollars, so everything from the National Institutes of Health to NASA to just other various department agencies that are looking to kind of develop research in their own areas of expertise, along with some private industry players as well. The new aerospace building at the University of Colorado Boulder was partially funded by donations from aerospace companies. And we do know that Zoetis, which is currently the world's largest producer of drugs for animal health reasons, they plan to open up a research lab at the Foothills campus of Colorado State sometime next year.
What do we know about where this money is going?
This money is mostly given to researchers. They might be postgrads, postdocs that are working in specific labs, or to professors that have specific ideas of things that they want to research. And it just kind of goes through a normal grant process.
And I know that you and Lucas High, another reporter for BizWest, each spoke to the presidents of CSU and CU about their research priorities. Can you tell us a little bit about what you found in those conversations?
So I spoke with President Joyce McConnell just a few days after she was inaugurated as the new president of Colorado State. Her focus really was on the specific industries and the specific areas that Colorado State already has a fair amount of expertise in. So as a land grant university, already has a fairly large background in agriculture. She specifically mentioned translational medicine, which is kind of this intersection point between treatments for animals and treatments for humans, and how ideas from either of those sides can cross over to make a more effective and more comfortable treatment.
And any sense about CU's priorities?
They seem to really be interested in pushing the aerospace side of things.
Do we have a sense of how this funding compares to past years?
So there's been a steady increase at both CSU and CU over the past couple of years, an increase in more and more research dollars coming in to those universities. And it does kind of buck the trend of federally, the amount of research and development dollars coming out of Washington has declined almost 15% from 2008 to the end of 2018. So there could be a lot of factors going on, but it seems like CU and CSU are continuing to get a fair cut of those dollars.
And I mean, I know there's a lot of uncertainty right now about the state of the economy. So what do we know about what happens to this research spending in the event of an economic downturn?
One of the things that really we've seen occur a lot is that college towns tend to absorb the effects of an economic recession fairly well compared to cities without a major research university, because federal spending still kind of goes on. You know, these contracts go on for multiple years, and it kind of creates an insulation for the local economy compared to just a city that has only major private employers being the main driver of the economy, because those private employers might have to consolidate a little bit or slow down their spending, potentially even have to reduce their headcounts, while universities will continue to keep on doing this research even if they have to tighten their belts somewhere else. But really, having that kind of research will keep highly educated workers that tend to make a lot of money and spend it in their communities, whether they're just shopping for groceries, trying to enjoy nightlife, that tends to keep those dollars in those cities.
Dan Micah is a reporter for BizWest. Thank you so much for joining us.
Always a pleasure.
Coloradans are thinking about climate change as a serious issue, and that's changing how many voters are approaching the upcoming 2020 Senate race. Here to tell us more is Jesse Paul, a writer for the Colorado Sun. Hey, Jesse.
Hi.
There are 9 Democrats currently running in the primary race for Republican Senator Cory Gardner's seat. So how is climate change playing a role in the rhetoric of that race?
So at least 3 or 4 of the top candidates say that climate change is the most important issue for them. It's the thing that really defines their campaign. And that includes former Governor John Hickenlooper and former Colorado House Speaker Andrew Romanoff, the two who are seen as really the main front runners in this race. So, you know, they're talking about it on the campaign trail. They're putting out policy statements on it. They're talking about it on social media. They're attacking Cory Gardner over it. It's a repetitive campaign stumping talking point for them.
And what sticks out to you? Are there any key differences in exactly how the candidates are approaching climate change?
Definitely. So Romanoff is endorsing the Green New Deal, kind of this really whole cloth change to the American system of the environment and infrastructure that you see talked about a lot on the congressional level. And John Hickenlooper in his presidential campaign, which he was in before he decided to jump over to the Senate race, actually denounced the Green New Deal as going a step too far, as setting unrealistic goals. So these two candidates have very different ideas about how to tackle the issue And Romanoff has not been shy about attacking Governor Hickenlooper over his reluctance to support the Green New Deal.
Let's talk a little more about the former governor, who is considered pretty much the front runner in this race, but some are criticizing his stance on climate change. What more can you tell us about what he is saying?
He really rejects anybody who thinks that he doesn't take climate change seriously enough. He told us in an interview recently that it's the single biggest issue for him on the campaign trail and something that he feels like he worked really hard as governor to tackle. But some progressive voters, and certainly Andrew Romanoff, say that he's not going far enough on this and criticize him for his ties to, say, the oil and gas industry. And one voter brought up to us the infamous Hickenlooper drinking fracking fluid. There are groups that have come out very forcefully to challenge and attack him over his climate change views and his response. And notably, you know, the groups point out that he didn't show up to either the climate strike in Denver, the massive protest, or the recent candidate forums for the Democratic candidates on climate change. And he says, you know, there were scheduling conflicts in both, and not to read into it too much, but certainly Romanoff and people who don't like his stances have used this as an opportunity to go on the offensive.
Well, let's talk about money. You reported that a lot of donations could come from this block of voters, from places like the League of Conservation Voters and the Sierra Club, among other groups. Do we have any idea yet where they're thinking of sending their dollars?
We don't, except for that it won't be going to Cory Gardner. So clearly they're going to back whoever the Democratic candidate is in 2020. And it's obviously unclear at this point who's going to win the party's nomination. But they're going to be a potent force in this election. They're kind of right up there, I think, with outdoor voters in Colorado, people who vote based off of their public land support and love of skiing and hiking and all those great things, as an important factor.
And briefly, this is the race against incumbent Republican Senator Cory Gardner. Where does he stand on climate change?
Senator Gardner, in an interview with us last year, says he believes that climate change is real, believes that it's caused by humans, doesn't want there to be any kind of mistake or misunderstanding about that. However, he's also very clear that he doesn't think that policies can be enacted that hurt people in Colorado, i.e. the fossil fuel industry, and take away jobs as a means to push back against climate change. So again, while he believes that it's real and it's happening and it's impacting the earth, he's opposed to things like the Green New Deal that would really be this whole cloth major change to the system.
Jesse Paul is a writer for the Colorado Sun. Jesse, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And now we turn to someone who identifies as one of the climate change voters Jesse talked about. He attended the Senate Forum on Climate Change held in Colorado Springs this past weekend.
10 candidates were at that forum, 8 Democrats and 2 Unity Party candidates. As Jesse said, former Governor John Hickenlooper did not attend. Senator Cory Gardner wasn't there either. But Mark Smith was. He's a professor of economics at Colorado College, and he joins us now. Mark, welcome to Colorado Edition.
I'm glad to be here.
How important is an issue like climate change to you when it comes to how you vote and who you're voting for?
So important. The situation is dire, and we need a candidate that is putting climate change at the very top of their priorities.
What were some of your takeaways from the recent climate forum you attended?
On the most basic level, it was just great to see that there was a debate on climate change, that 10 of the 12 Senate candidates were there, and that they'd taken the time to prepare seriously and to talk about the issue. The forum was very civil, and the different candidates treated each other well, and I really appreciated that.
Were there any clear policy differences between how candidates were approaching this issue?
I wouldn't say that there were clear policy differences. There were clear differences in how much that each candidate emphasized climate change. And I appreciated the honesty with which one or two candidates said, I care about this issue, but this is not my major issue.
Did the forum change the way that you're thinking about this race?
I have a candidate now, and I've sent in money to the campaign.
And I mean, how much do you see a senator as really being able to do when it comes to this big global issue?
I see it as extremely important. Since the election of President Trump, the states and what we call subnational actors, states and cities, have really been taking the lead on climate change. But this is really a national and international problem. And if we don't have leadership and action on the national level, we're not going to get to where we want to be or we need to be.
Mark Smith is a professor of economics at Colorado College. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's been a pleasure.
And that's our show for today. Tomorrow on Colorado Edition, how homeowners are coping with the invasive emerald ash borer. I'm Lily Tyson, sitting in today for Henry Zimmerman.
And I'm Erin O'Toole. Brian Larson is our executive producer. And before we get out of here today, just a quick reminder that Colorado Edition is made possible by listener support. We're starting our fall membership drive here at KUNC. And if you value the news that you get from Colorado Edition, conversations ranging from the latest in business, education, or the arts, please support it by making a contribution right now.
It's really easy to become a sustaining member. Just go online to kunc.org. And, you know, it's a payment you'll feel really good about making any month because you're supporting the news that you rely on.
And thanks so much for listening. This is Colorado Edition from KUNC.